This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
We're back for hour number two of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick Maher today. Big thanks to Brian Ortega, our producer behind the glass, the rest of the crew here at our Circus Sportsbook studios in downtown Las Vegas. Michael, with our discussion about some historical Coach of the Year stuff last segment, it got me thinking and needing to remind everybody, you do have a book coming out that you're in the process here of writing here. So remind us again about that, because that continues to be on my long-term reading list.
Yeah, well, it's a book about, you know, the Hall of Fame, and it's a book about the process that we go through, and a lot of players that I think are, you know, I was talking to a head coach the other day. I mean, Marty Schottenheimer is a perfect example. Here's a guy who's won, only nine human beings on this planet have won 200 more games, 200 or more, nine. And there's been 514 people that have called themselves head coach, whether it's been one game or 50 games, it doesn't matter. You've been a head coach. So, nine out of 514 is a really small percentage. And if that doesn't get you in the Hall of Fame, I don't know what does. And then on the other side, George Allen, who has a 70% winning percentage, who's been only coached 100 games and went to a Super Bowl but lost as a favorite in 1972 to the Miami undefeated Miami Dolphins, he's in the Hall of Fame. So it's so political. And when you boil it down and you realize that Nolan Ryan never won a Cy Young, right? You realize how political the process of this voting is. And that's why, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that the best players are in the Hall of Fame. You know, there's some guys that aren't in the Hall of Fame that belong in the Hall of Fame. I mean, Ron Kramer, the tight end for the Green Bay Packers, who was, you know, I mean, this is one of the rarest athletes you're ever going to see in your life. I mean, he won more letters at the University of Michigan than anybody. He set the Packer sweep. They didn't throw the ball a lot. If he played today, Ron Kramer would have been Gronk. But nobody knows Ron Kramer. You know, There's so many of those kind of stories that you go through.
That's a pretty good comp as well. That comes out next summer, right? Your book?
Yeah, Hall of Fame week next summer. I think it's going to come out. And I rank the top 100 players, and we go through. John Hadle just passed away. We go through all the trades, and I talk about the John Hadle trade, which is a fascinating trade to boil down, and the Jimmy Johnson trade, and how Jimmy kind of created that, and created it with the Minnesota Vikings. There's a lot of trade scenarios that we see happen that create desperation from teams. Mm-hmm. So I kind of go through that. And then, you know, we pay tribute to the great people of television, one of being Brent Musburger here, about who really, you know, the perfect storm of football and TV coming together, and Brent enlightening people with the betting market that let's put things in perspective. The ratings are up because there's action on the game. People want to watch. And so there's no bad games. As we know here at VSiN Network, there's no bad games. There's just games to bet on. Like, we could say Denver-Arizona this week's a bad game, but it's a great opportunity to bet. I mean,
I was going to say, we led the show with Arizona-Denver.
Yeah, I mean, there's a tremendous opportunity to bet on it. So, and then the great Howard Cosell, who both – now, this is, again, we want to talk about awards. Let's talk about awards. The Pete Rozelle Award goes out to people in the media who have had tremendous impact on the game of football and have advanced the game of football. Howard Cosell and Brent Musburger have never won the Pete Rozelle Award. How is that even possible? How is it possible? Howard Cosell basically made Monday Night Football. He made it. He made Monday Night Football. It became the sensation. We would never have known about Miller Lite if it wasn't for Monday Night Football and their insistence on getting onto that show and advertising on there, and then their commercials. It would have never happened. It would have never happened. And the only reason that ABC got Monday Night Football was because, you know, CBS had Gunsmoke and they had Andy Griffith and they didn't want it. And, you know, NBC had Rowan and Martin and they didn't want it, you know. And so, like, okay, we'll take it. Nobody thought it was going to be. And then Cosell comes on and gives opinions and backs up his opinions with what he believes as fact. People gravitated to it.
Hard to believe those two names you just listed, including our guy here at the network, Brent Musburger, have never won the Pete Rozelle Award. Cannot wait for that book to come out. And we do have some time for it. That'll be next summer before the Hall of Fame weekend, which we're looking forward to. It is a good point, though, on the games that no matter what the game is on the card, there is always going to be betting interest and opportunity for us to talk about. At least
we got to find that edge.
Got to find the edge.
All the money's green. It's always been green. We just have to find that edge, you know. And where is that edge? And where can we see it, you know? And handicap the games. And this time of the year, the weather comes a handicap too, right? We're going to talk about Buffalo, Miami. I mean, you know, our boy Tua, let's see what he's going to do in cold weather. This is going to be fascinating.
Latest reports out of the Buffalo weather, Michael, as we turn our attention to the marquee game on Saturday, part of the Week 15 Saturday triple header. Expecting sub-freezing temperatures, rain, snow mix, wind in the mid-teens in Buffalo. Now you get Miami, warm weather, pass-happy team led by quarterback Tua Tagovailoa going to the East Coast for a third straight road game. How does this end for Miami?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest concern is this snow mix. I think cold is hard, but if you go back and watch Tua play against Tennessee last year, and you go back and watch the beginning of the game when it wasn't raining, it was okay. They had the first drive, they started to move the ball down the field. Once it started to rain and he had no control over that football and the ball and he couldn't drive it, the game was over. It was over. That's where I say I'm surprised this line is at 7. Like, I think the Jets are better than Miami. And that line was 10 last week. Now, Buffalo did not play well last week, but the Jets defense had a lot to do with that. But they didn't play well, and they were able to get off the field on third down. The Jets defense got off the field. They created a tough situation. The weather was bad last week, too, now. I don't think we talked enough about that. That weather was bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were able to come away with the win. But, you know, my sense of that is really I'm surprised they're just a 7-point favorite. I thought it would be a little bit of a higher line here only because of last week. Like my numbers for the game, you know, my numbers for this game, I had an 8.47.
Number was about 8 in a lot of the openers, Michael, and it's been interesting to see the market support actually come to Miami. We're down in a lot of spots to 7.5. There are a lot of 7s as well, albeit juiced to the Buffalo side. And you look at it, as much as we've focused in the past on Jared Goff's outdoor numbers, you look at the numbers for Tagovailoa, there's only 2 outdoor December/January games. You mentioned one of them, Tennessee last year, 18 of 38 in that game, 205 yards, an interception as the Dolphins put up 3 points. The other one was in Buffalo in his rookie year. Remember that? A game that Buffalo had nothing to play for. If Miami won, they would have been in the playoffs. And Tagovailoa threw one touchdown, 3 interceptions in a game that Miami lost by 30, 56-26. It's a small sample size, but you can't imagine that this is profiled to go all that swimmingly for a Miami team not even playing well, even in good conditions over the last 2 weeks.
Well, I think what you have to do is, you know, one of the things I think that has become a little bit more of a life itself is this, you know, people think we hate Tua. I don't hate Tua. I think Tua's an average player. I think Tua's, I'm not saying Tua's a complete dud, but Tua's not this elite. He should not be the highest voted player in the league as the best quarterback. I mean, this is nonsense. And the reason why weather affects him is our eyes. We watch him. The ball, he has no velocity on the ball. The ball doesn't travel. So when you see him throwing it without velocity and drive, you say, well, when weather comes into play, it's going to be harder for him, right? Is he accurate? There's no doubt. Is he accurate? No, there's no question he's accurate. Is he has good rhythm to the game? No question. Not a big guy. Not fast. There's nothing elite about Tua. So the reason he's so toxic as a conversation is because there's a group of people who haven't gone to Pearle Vision Center to have their eyes examined that have put Tua in this elite category of player. He's a good player, not elite. Can you win a Super Bowl with him? I don't think you can. I don't think you can because you're going to have to travel through some bad weather cities to get there, and you're going to have to play against some good teams. That notion that Tua was just running through the league was a joke. I mean, you saw it on Monday night. Everybody picked Miami like there was some kind of he was going to go out there and dominate against a bad defense. Then let's make matters worse. McDaniels decides he's going to throw it in the game. He wants to throw it in the game because even though the Chargers have the worst run defense in football, averaging 5 yards a carry, but he's going to feature it. You know why? Because here's the underlying factor. Because Tua was picked ahead of Herbert, and they wanted to prove to everybody in America that Tua is just as good as Herbert. And what did they prove by doing what they did? They proved that it's not even close.
And it's why the head coaching, as much as the criticism has come to Tua Tagovailoa at quarterback, you just wonder on a rookie head coach in Mike McDaniel, who's never been through this before, as a play caller, it was really suspect Sunday night in a game that profiled as such where Miami should have had a lot of success against a banged up, bad defense of the Chargers. Couldn't do anything. And I mean, they didn't even cross into the Chargers territory until the third quarter, had the two miraculous deep plays for touchdowns.
Well, let's think about this for a second. They hire McDaniel under the advertisement that he is a run game guru, okay? That his running game is what separates them, all right? So there's only been four games where they've run over 100 yards this season. Like, they've made no attempt to really try to run the ball. They've been preoccupied with trying to create this mythology that Tua is better than Herbert. And a lot of it comes from the ownership, because the owner really was involved in picking Tua over Herbert. Let's make no mistake about that. There was people in the building that wanted Herbert. They're not there anymore. But that's what happened. And so they're just constantly. Meanwhile, he got hired to run the ball. Their offensive line isn't conducive to being great pass protectors. We saw it the other night. I mean, the Chargers don't have a great pass rushing team at all. And they were able to. I mean, the last 2 weeks against two teams, they've gotten 308 yards and 219. They didn't even try to run the ball.
And Miami now, even sitting 8-5 with the 6th seed in the AFC, I said it yesterday, if there is a long shot bet to make on a yes-no playoff team, Miami at plus 225 with two really tough road games at Buffalo this week, at New England in 3 weeks' time, and a home game to close the season against the Jets. Plus 225, not all that bad. When we come back, there's some interesting injury news and notes coming out on a Wednesday that we'll get to in the NFL Week 15 card.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
We're back on the Lombardi Line. Still a lot for us to get to in hour number two. Harry Gagnon from the Against All Odds podcast will join us in about 15 minutes. Michael, just checking the newswire coming in, some of the injury reports on a Wednesday leading into week 15 of NFL action. The one that jumps out to me, this whole rumor of like Marcus Mariota for the Falcons is benched,
yeah,
then apparently steps away from the team, which we were trying to parse through yesterday, couldn't really figure out anything definitive. And now, just a few minutes ago, the Falcons place him on injured reserve to undergo knee surgery, out for the rest of the year, according to head coach Arthur Smith. What a bizarre response for Mariota, as we will now see Desmond Ridder make his debut at quarterback this week.
And they got to bring Logan Woodside back. I mean, he was out of football, right? They bring him back in, and you know, to be the backup quarterback because Mariota took off. I mean, I don't know if Mariota was upset that he got benched, but you know, look, I think that I give Arthur Smith a ton of credit for what he's been able to do with this team. Their defense isn't very good. They've run the ball on everybody. They've been in a lot of games other than the Cincinnati game. They've had chances to win at the end. They've just haven't been able to do it. So, you know, I mean, they had New Orleans beat in the opener, if you remember that game. I mean, it took a miracle effort by New Orleans to come back. And so, you know, to me, New Orleans is a 4-point favorite in this game. I don't see it. I had this as a much closer game. But you know, Atlanta with Mariota, I can't imagine Ryder can be any. They're going to run the same offense. He's going to run the six-back offense, which has been successful. You know, I mean, Mariota has never been able to get that career going to the level that a lot of people thought he had it.
And at least for Ridder, a rookie coming in out of Cincinnati, having the bye week has to help. And as much as you could say, well, it's a 5-8 team, end of the year, just trying to see what they've got in a rookie, Falcons are only a game out of first in the NFC South. I mean, everybody's still alive technically in the NFC South, and the Saints don't even have their own first-round draft pick for next year. Eagles would have a top-five pick if the draft were to be held tomorrow. So the incentive is going to be there for these teams. The market hasn't really decided what it wants to do, but it is pretty notable, right, that the market is saying there's not much of a difference in their eyes between Mariota and Ridder. It stayed four pretty much the whole week. Maybe a couple of shops have started to tick up to 4.5, but it's a pretty negligible difference, isn't it?
Yeah, I think this, though, Ben, you know, I mean, we're seeing these quarterbacks leave college early. Anthony Richardson, ridiculously, that he would come out early. I don't know why. He needs more seasoning. But Ridder started 48 games. We saw Brock Purdy start 46 games. I mean, you got to start, you know, when you start a lot of games and play in a lot of games, it only helps you when you transition into pro football. I think we see it with Kenny Pickett, too, right? That they're able to, you know, you start in a lot of games, you get game experience, you get reps. It helps you. He's had all year to be on the practice squad. He's been running it. I'm not saying it's going to be easy for him because the Dennis Allen defense will be complex, but Arthur Smith will make it a lot easier for him. I don't see it. I didn't lower their power ranking this year because of Ritter. I mean, I never had Mariota very high. They're a six-back team. How high do you make their quarterback in the power ranking? You know, and this is a kid who's, he had 500 rushes in college, Ritter. I mean, he ran the ball 500 times in college, so he's going to run it. I mean, they're gonna look like the Philadelphia Eagles with maybe more ability to throw the ball down the field because Mariota's arm strength, as the season wore on, became less and less effective.
And for New Orleans, we also wait to see, will there be a change at quarterback? Oh, sounds like we're still getting Andy Dalton at quarterback.
I think Dennis Allen does not trust Jameis Winston one bit to protect the football. I think it's the same reason why we haven't gotten Mike Tomlin come out and say, what's going on with Kenny Pickett? A, can Kenny Pickett clear protocol? But I don't think Mike Tomlin's like all that, you know, he had a chance to win that game if Trubisky doesn't just make Trubisky-like mistakes, right? So I don't think he wants to give that away. You know, and so I think that's another one that's out there that we're not sure who's going to play quarterback because it's you got to be concerned about it. I think he, you know, does he go to Mason Rudolph? I mean, what does he do?
That's a hard question to ask. And for a rookie in Kenny Pickett, we transition to Pittsburgh, Carolina, since that's another game featuring NFC South teams with that just horrific division and every team still alive. You have to think for a rookie in Kenny Pickett who's now had a second concussion in a matter of weeks, it'd be really hard to see him clear protocol.
They shouldn't let him clear protocol. It's very much doubtful
that he would. So Carolina, laying 2.5, it's a team that's playing really, really well under interim head coach Steve Wilks. You got to like that side, don't you?
Well, I mean, look, Carolina, the last 2 weeks, they've run for 185 against Denver, which is a really good defense, right? They run for 185 against Denver. They run for 223. They ran for 232 against Atlanta when they won. They're 3-1 the last 4 weeks, right? They're 3-1 the last 4 weeks. And frankly, you know, if DJ Moore keeps his helmet on, you know, they're going to be 5-3 over the last 8 weeks. I mean, think about that. They're playing better. You know, they did a great job against Geno Smith in the passing game. Look, Pittsburgh struggled last week to handle the run. I mean, Baltimore had a chance to, you know, Pittsburgh had a chance to get the ball back in that game, and Baltimore couldn't stop them from running the football. And so, you know, Baltimore ran for 215. I mean, Baltimore wins that game last week with 94 yards passing. Now, granted, they turned it over three times, and Pittsburgh should have won the game. But, I mean, one thing about Carolina this year, Carolina in the last 5 weeks, their run game is good, and they can run it. They've got different kind of players. I think it's a lesson all of us can learn because with McCaffrey there, they didn't really know who they were offensively, right? They were a little bit of everything. They're the diner. They wanted to cook everything. They couldn't cook anything good. But once he left and they traded him and they said, okay, we're going to be a power team now, that's who they are, and they're good at it. And they will move the ball on. They will run the ball. I mean, they'll start out slow like they did against Seattle, but eventually they're going to run the ball. They're going to try to control the clock and win the game that way. And that's the only way they can. And look, one thing about them, they can rush the passer. And Pittsburgh's pass, you know, Pittsburgh cannot pass protect. I mean, let's be honest here. Pittsburgh's not a great run pass team. And Pittsburgh can't really run the ball. I mean, when Pittsburgh can't run the ball, that's where they get into trouble.
It's a game that line-wise within the market, if you expect this to continue to rise with the assumption that quarterback Kenny Pickett will not clear protocol for Pittsburgh, and neither you nor I believe he will, I really like Carolina. If you're letting me lay less than a field goal, the offensive line, something that's really impressed me as well, Michael. If you look at advanced numbers, up to 10th in run blocking, 8th in pass protection, and with Ike Ekwonu, a rookie left tackle, I know you've been breaking down the film on him and the rest of the O-line, but his development has really been impressive. It's allowed that running game to have so much success going not only up the middle but also to the outside. And even with no Christian McCaffrey, to me, Michael, that's allowed them to have a lot of success. And you get a Pittsburgh defense, bottom 12 in the league defending the run. Sign me up for that once again.
Yeah, I mean, it's all going to come down to, can they protect the football? Can Sam Darnold play within the framework of what they want to do? And the way they call the game – you know, I think they call it, I don't want to say conservatively, they call it so that they play the game smart. They don't want Darnold to mess them up. And they have a great combination of running backs. I mean, Chuba Hubbard gives them a little bit of a dancer and with power inside and get to the edge. And then they bring this Blackshear kid in too. But I agree, the offensive line has been the strength. James Campen has done a really good job from left tackle to right tackle. This line has really improved. And Chenault gives them another big runner. As when he gets the ball in his hands, he's like a running back. I mean, he's hard to tackle. Mm-hmm. I mean, he made the big run against the Saints earlier in the year. So, look, and then defensively, last week, I mean, Brian Burns really didn't put much pressure on Geno Smith. They were able to make plays, and J.C. Horn is a legitimate cover guy. He can go take somebody out of a game.
I wonder now, if especially with a new ownership group, with David Tepper coming in Carolina, does Steve Wilks get that job next year? A guy who was a one-and-done in Arizona?
I mean, I don't know how he doesn't. I don't know how he doesn't when you look at what this team has done. I mean, look, you know, I mean, he's not going to get the job. I mean, if DJ Moore keeps his helmet on, you know, they're in first place. They're in first place, and they're 6-8. And he's won four of those six games. I mean, he's won four of those six games.
Since he came in, interim head coach Steve Wilks, Carolina fourth in overall defensive efficiency. The improvements have been there, and we're now seeing offensive line play dictate things and lead to fewer turnovers now from Sam Darnold in that offense.
I mean, the only game, I mean, Rhule got fired after the San Francisco game. They're 1-4, right? They go out and play the Rams, and they play pretty good against the Rams, but they had no passing game at all. They couldn't throw the ball. They were worried about PJ Walker throwing it. And then the next week they come back and they play Tampa. They're a 13.5-point dog against Tampa. Right? They shut out. They basically destroyed Tampa 21-3. They lose that overtime loss in Atlanta. They had a chance to win that game, and they let it go because of the DJ Moore. And then they missed a field goal in overtime too, right? I mean, there was a double whammy there. I mean, so, you know, when you think about it, I mean, he's won four games, but he should have won five. I mean, he should be 5-2 as a head coach. I don't know how he doesn't get the job. To me, it would be really an injustice for him not to. And if he beats Pittsburgh this week, he definitely should get the job.
If he beats Pittsburgh, and if Tampa loses to Cincinnati, where they are a dog, the Carolina Panthers would be leading the NFC South, who are plus 375 right now. BetMGM, is that not worth just a sprinkle at this point?
Yeah, I think they got Detroit after that at home, and then they go Tampa and New Orleans. I mean, it's a hard sled for them to run. But look, they're playing their best football defensively and offensively. They're playing their best football. And the last 4 weeks, they're 3-1. They're playing their best football. Yeah.
Of the four teams, who do you power rate right now, number one, or just your raw ratings in the NFC South?
You know, I mean, I give it to Tampa. I have no faith in Tampa. Brady's averaging 45 passes a game. How can you win that way?
Tampa, but only slightly in the NFC South. They're minus 300 right now to win the division. When we return, Harry Gagnon from the Against All Odds podcast. He has a boatload of plays.
To the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
VSiN is the gift that keeps on giving. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber for only $79 and get access to everything we do from now through the big dance. Sign up today and you'll also receive $20 to buy VSiN sports betting hats, shirts, mugs, and other great gear at our online store. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests. Tools like our betting splits let you see where the money and bets are moving every game. Deep dive betting reports plus our ongoing college bowl coverage with best bets on every bowl game. This is a limited time offer, so sign up now for the perfect sports betting holiday gift and get VSiN Pro access through the end of March Madness at VSiN.com/subscribe. Pleased for us to welcome on Harry Gagnon to the show right now from the Against All Odds podcast with Cousin Sal, rest of the Degenerate Trifecta. And I understand, Harry, as part of the Extra Points Podcast Network, you guys are making your way to Vegas. You're going to visit me here in Sin City for the final week of the NFL season and College Football National Championship. Pumped for that. Tell us about that.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, I'll definitely pop over. And one of the 2 days, we're definitely going to be at the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club across the street from Caesars. We're going to start that for both game, early games and afternoon games. At the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club in Las Vegas on the Strip across from Caesars. Just come on over, meet us, and shoot the breeze with us, talk bets. We're going to be there all day on Sunday. That is January 8th, Sunday. And then on the 9th, we are going to be there at the same Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club for the NCAA National Championship game. It's going to be a blast. Guys, Mike, if you can make it, we'd love to have you, man.
Hey, Michael, let's get you out here.
I'd love to, yeah. I mean, I'd love to. It'd be awesome.
That would love you there, Mike. So what a surprise that would be.
Yeah, we'll effort that behind the scenes, even though, I mean, you've got Michael has his Sunday, you know, he's got the bunker going on. He's got all the viewing games because he has a show there in Atlantic City. Harry, I know a tough week for you last week. We were thinking about you with your teaser with the Raiders losing in just epic fashion, and then the Cowboys leg of that also complete no-shows. The Lions had to impress you, though. That was the game you really liked. They do win and cover against Minnesota. It's obviously a big ask, though, now going to the New York Jets in an outdoor bad weather game. About a pick 'em right now, but what do you make of this renaissance here from the Detroit Lions?
I'll tell you, I mean, this is almost as good, guys, for both the Lions and Jets this week. It's more like it's a playoff game for them. It's probably losers out of the playoff run. But this Lions team, I'll tell you what, for the last 5 weeks now, they've scored 31 points or more. And Dan Campbell deserves a ton of credit. The call he made to throw that pass on 3rd and 8 to Penei Sewell to get that first down and have him go down. It was just magnificent play calling. The fake punt before that on 4th and 4 in the first half. They go 42 yards on that and connect on points, and Goff's been fantastic. I believe over his last six games, I think he's 10 touchdowns, 1 pick overall. This seems scary right now, Mike. Very scary.
I mean, I'm not sure that Dan Campbell knew that call was going in. You can give him all the credit you want, Harry, but I don't think he knew they were throwing it to Sewell. I mean, he's even admitted as such.
He didn't even know it. Yeah.
But, I mean, it was the right call, because if they punt the ball back to Minnesota, they're going to lose. They could lose the game. I mean, they never had control of the game defensively. You know, it was a back-and-forth game that the turnovers kind of gave Detroit control. And him being aggressive, I thought it was great with a punt. And, look, let's face it, they're improving. My numbers in my power rankings, as Ben and I, we talked about earlier in the show, they've come a long way defensively. And Goff has played really well. And as often as I criticize Goff for playing in cold weather, he's played well the last 2 weeks in cold weather.
Yeah, and, you know, granted, Minnesota's still going to win the division, and Detroit sneaks in. Tell you what, the Vikings do not want to play Detroit. That is not the type of team they want to go up and down the field with, especially considering Minnesota's got to fix a lot of holes on defense. This is the first time, Mike, I believe, in franchise history that they've allowed 400 yards of offense in 5 straight games.
That's they can't slow anybody down, and it does. You don't have to be an elite quarterback to throw the ball on them, and they can't. When they can't get pressure, and they've gotten no pressure in the last 4 weeks, when they don't get pressure, they can't make a play, and they were fortunate against the Jets.
Harry, Vikings are laying 4 this week, though, against Indianapolis, and that is a game that did make your card. How are you attacking this spot on Saturday?
Yeah, I'm going to do a two-team parlay, guys. I'm going to do two-team money line parlay, pays plus 115. And on Saturday, right, Ben, I'm going to start off with Minnesota on the money line, minus 210 versus Indy. Like I mentioned, Vikings definitely need to fix some holes on defense. But Indianapolis is just 24th overall in total offense. And Cousins and the crew, too good on offense. And Vikings clinch the NFC North with a win. And I'm going to parlay that to Washington, minus 220 against the Giants. Look, I know they tied a couple weeks ago. Why do you still think right now Washington is the better team? 5 straight weeks with Saquon Barkley. He's got that neck injury. He's gone for 50 yards or less. And Washington, 6-1-1 in the last 8. New York, 1-4-1 in their last 6. I think Washington gets it done here and kind of eliminates maybe the Giants from playoff contention.
I mean, you know, it's interesting how you kind of put those two together. I'm a little bit worried. Washington coming off a bye. We've seen teams come off byes that haven't really started very quick. Last week, Seattle coming off a bye. Geno throws an interception on the first drive of the game. Kind of like it didn't seem to me like these late byes are a little bit problematic, because it's kind of hard to get your rhythm back again. And the Giants – look, the Giants had control of the game the first time. I'm surprised the line is as high as it is. I think it's a flip game. I really do. I have it that way. I don't know what to make of Indianapolis. I know the owner wants to hire Saturday full-time. I think he's just looking for any excuse to do that and trying to justify that move. I mean, Minnesota will move the football. Can Minnesota stop the run? I think that's the question, Harry.
Seeing Giants, Washington, either 4.5 or 5 right now, depending on where you look in the market. Open in a lot of the offshore books, so Commanders -4. Harry, it is teaser time. You're going back to the well. Where is your plan of attack taking us this week on the teaser front?
All right, yeah, we're going to hit this one, guys. 7-point teaser.
Okay.
I'm going to take the Pats against the Raiders. I'm going to take the Pats up to +6. And I'm going to take the Jags from 4 up to +11.5 at home against the Cowboys. But I had New England on Monday against Arizona. And why, you guys? 2 reasons. Arizona's just 1-11 in their last 12 at home. Now they're 1-12 in their last 13 games at home. And second, in taking I'm taking Belichick every time over with Kingsbury. I'm doing it again. I just think Bill over Josh McDaniel looks right here. New England's still the 7th seed in the AFC, a lot to play for. Great defensive game against Arizona, like I mentioned. 6 sacks. Matthews Judon has been fantastic this year, 14.5 sacks total. So I'm going to take the Patriots +6 against the Raiders. Game may be close here, which most of the Raider games are, so I'm going to take the +6 for the Pats. And, like I said, I'm going to take Jacksonville +11.5 against Dallas. I'm saying it. I love how the Jags looked last week. And I'm taking the better quarterback here. The better quarterback right now is not Dak Prescott. It is Trevor Lawrence. Since Dak's returned, he's thrown more picks than any other quarterback in the league. And Lawrence has 24 total touchdowns, just 6 picks. Last 5 games, Jacksonville is 3-2 straight up. Lawrence, 10 touchdowns, no picks over that time. I'm going to take the Jags, who played mostly one-digit games all season. I'm going to take them plus double digits here against Dallas.
You know, the impressive thing about Lawrence last week was the fact that, you know, they didn't really run the football very effectively.
But
they tried.
Ineffective.
They tried to run it, you know, which was important. Even though we threw it 44 times in the game, they did try to run it. You know, I get worried when they try to overthrow put him in too many situations. But I agree. I think he's playing well, and I think he's made a lot of great throws, and he's protecting the football, something Dak hasn't done. And that's the key. You know, you go back to the Eagle game where they had 4 turnovers in that rain on week 4 of the season. They've done a nice job of slowing this down. Now, last week they were fortunate. They created 4 turnovers with their defense. That's the best their defense has played since going back to when they played the Raiders in week 9.
Mm-hmm. And we're looking now at the market going toward Jacksonville's way, Harry, from 6 on the Dallas opener in a lot of spots now to 4 pretty much market-wide. Couple of 4.5s, including at BetMGM, still out there. Again, you can follow Harry at AAO Harry. We have a Thursday night game tomorrow, Harry, in the division NFC West. Is there a sneaky little edge here that you found?
Tell us this. I'm going to buy the half from 3 up to 3.5 with the Seahawks at -105. Guys, look, this is one of those games, right? National TV, and then dating back to last week, Seattle couldn't stop Carolina last week to save their playoff-hoping lives. Geno 2 picks, no running game with K-9 out, and San Fran looked flawless versus Brady and the Bucks. The whole football world has fallen in love with Brock Purdy. It all seems too good, I think, here for San Francisco. Except Debo won't be there. He had that injury. I think that's going to be a weapon that Brock needed, especially in Brock Purdy's first road game. I think the 12th man rises up here. I think Uncle Pete gets his team pumped up and ready. They're still in that playoff hunt, too. And since 2008, the Seahawks have lost 3 games in a row at home in a season, just 1 time. They're on the verge of doing that again here if they lose this game. I don't think they do. I think that I'm going to take 3.5 just in case, but I think you can sprinkle a little Seattle money line, too.
All right. I don't think that's happened, the 3
great
home
job,
losses,
Harry.
Harry, since the Charlie Fry Seneca Wallace day. So thank you, as always, Harry, for the insight. We'll catch
thanks,
up with
Harry.
You next week.
Thanks,
great
guys.
To see Harry Gagnon here on the show. Time for our Thursday night breakdown when we return. Niners, Seahawks next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits, like free bets. It's never been easier to join the action on the new BetMGM app, featuring a fresh redesign with improved features and quicker navigation. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining shows and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards is sports betting's premier loyalty program, including exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager with BetMGM. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to take advantage of BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Big thanks to our whole crew as we wrap up the show today on the Lombardi Line. Our producer, Brian Ortega, Andrew Ingold, our technical director with Sergio Sanchez, Mikhail Bala, Andre Perezo, Troy Kinch, everybody behind the glass here at our Circa Sportsbook Studios. The one quick injury note I just saw, Michael, we were talking Giants Commanders with Harry Gagnon in our last segment. Brian Daboll confirming head coach of the Giants to reporters today. Saquon Barkley, his star running back, will be back to full participation at practice starting today with that nagging neck injury. Have to think trending in the right direction. A guy who clearly has not been 100% when you've watched him on the field the last few weeks.
No, but I think, you know, I would worry about, you know, that thinking that the Washington's just going to take this game over. It was a close game the last time they played them. And the Giants should get Leonard Williams back, too, this week. He's got a stinger. They've had a bunch of guys with stingers. To get them back, that'll help them. And Daniel Jones, if he can manage the game correctly and they get a little bit of a run game here, that they become a better team. So, you know, I think it's hard to beat a team twice. I don't think home field matters here at all. You know, I know that the Giants lost it. They had a 2013 lead, 4th and 17, and McLaurin and Heinicke makes that great throw and catch to convert that first down, and they end up winning the end up tying the game and get it, you know, and they, of course, they tied it. So, I mean, I'm surprised the line is as high as it is. I really am. I don't know about you, but I thought this would be a 2. I had it as a 2.63 game. And my game codes, both teams are kind of even. I don't. For some reason, people think Washington has become a better team than they really are.
Right. It's certainly a factor of home field advantage, which is we look at MetLife Stadium and FedEx Field and Washington. It's really not much that ought to be baked into the line, but it's pretty much similar. If you were to say 1 point of home field advantage, you're flipping it from Washington was laying 2.5 at MetLife Stadium right before the Commanders' bye week, now laying 4.5 at home. That's all I see with this, Michael. It's just the bacon line of that points worth of home field advantage, but neither you or I really feel like that should be worth all that much, right?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm going to keep monitoring the game and the injury reports, but, you know, the Giants, I mean, this is their season, and they think they know it, right? They were embarrassed last week by Philly. They didn't play to a level that they would be accustomed. They didn't play a style, let's say that they have to play. And this, I think this is their season. And once again, as I said to Harry, teams that come off a bye, I tend to think they start a little slower. And let's face it, this Washington team, Heinicke will make mistakes. I mean, let's not confuse ourselves with that. This isn't the second coming of Joe Montana here now. I mean, this guy's going to make some mistakes in a game against most everybody, right? So I think the Commanders are a good story. They've improved defensively. They certainly have. But I don't trust them offensively enough to really think that they're going to be able to control the game, you know. And look, the last time they played the Giants, you know, the Giants actually ran the ball on them for 134 yards the last time they played them.
It's a game that profiled very, very tightly in the first meeting, and that was, as we know, just a couple weeks ago with the Commanders having to buy up Giants, then losing at home to Philadelphia last week, now taking on Washington in Landover. They're 4.5. Most of the market numbers right now, a couple have gone to 5, though, in favor of Washington. In a similar vein, Michael, Thursday Night Football, you could make the case Seattle, this is really their season on the line now.
Yeah.
Playoff odds have shifted from minus 550 at BetMGM, now down to minus 145 to make a team that is on the outside looking in right now. Seahawks catching 3.5, still at a couple books. We are seeing enough market movement to bring the number down to 3, albeit juiced on San Francisco's side. As the interest is to Seattle, are you thinking this is going to be a spot to back the Seahawks on Thursday night?
You know, let's go back to the first time they played, right? And this was the Trey Lance got injured game, okay? And then Garoppolo has to come in and go. And so they ran the ball 45 times in the game. The last time they played him for 189 yards. They only threw it 24 times. And they were able to – Geno Smith was accurate and – but they were able to limit the big plays, and Seattle had 10 penalties for 106 yards. They just couldn't do anything, and they couldn't convert third downs. San Francisco controlled the game. They had the ball over 38 minutes in the game. So that's the way this game's got to go this time. And when you watch Seattle, I mean, Seattle's a really good offense, but I thought they got physically beat up last week by Carolina up front. I mean, Carolina ran the ball on them. And Carolina didn't make any bones about it. They weren't going to throw the ball very much. They were going to run it, and they kept running it. And they ran it on third down. They ran it on first down. The only time Carolina went outside themselves is when they had the ball first and goal with the three, and they decided to throw four passes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was like, yeah. Where did this come from, right? Where did this come from? You're conservative the whole game, and now all of a sudden you want to become, you know, you're playing for field goals, and now you turn down a field goal. That was shocking to me. So I don't have a lot of confidence that Seattle – can stop the run. I mean, because when you play San Francisco, you got to pick your poison. If you stay base against them, they're way faster than you think they are. And so there's too many throws you can make, and they still can devise the run game. They still are able to be able to kick out and be able to get their run game going. So I think when I live my numbers, I mean, San Francisco has moved up. And I don't know where you are with your power ranking on San Francisco, but last week they were you know, this last week they were fourth. This week they move up to third, but they are truly moved up significantly in the top 19 categories of what I value. I mean, last week they were in the top 14 in those categories, and they only had one bad category. This week they are in the top 16 in those categories. Mm-hmm.
I have San Francisco second right now, behind only Philadelphia at this point, with the improvement they have shown and proving that with a quarterback in Brock Purdy, who sure was Mr. Irrelevant, it's more about the players around him and the scheme. It's why if this game were on a Sunday at Lumen Field in Seattle, what would this line be? 5.5 with San Francisco, baking in a full week of practice for Brock Purdy's first road start, where he's limited with an oblique to start the week. Christian McCaffrey banged up with a knee. He's played through the last couple of weeks. He's been limited at practice as well. But you combine the short week with a desperate Seattle team. Numbers why I say this should be San Francisco all the way. It's a spot, though, that makes me really, really hesitant and one that I would not want to back the Niners, just at least staying away for me pregame.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's always been my modus operandi. I just stay away. The Thursday night games are way too unpredictable. I think if the Raiders would have played the Rams on a Sunday, even if Baker Mayfield would have had more reps, they probably would have been better off for it. But, you know, that's what we like about Thursday night football. It's kind of it forces you to have to play quicker and change your strategy. But this is two teams that know each other, right? So this is two teams that understand each other. They play each other all the time. It's going to come down to turnovers. The last game, Seattle turned it over three times, San Francisco. I think Brock Purdy going into this game, I would expect Kyle to be very conservative in this game. I don't think he's going to want Purdy to lose the game, especially in that hostile environment. I could see them coming out and trying to run the ball to take the Carolina game plan and basically say, you're Sam Darnold this week, Brock Purdy. We're going to throw it 50. I mean, they only threw it 24 times in the last game. I would be surprised if they throw it more than that in this game.
It makes a lot of sense. It's why I would not want to look at a side whatsoever. I'd only go total under 43.5 when you consider Seattle only put up 7 in the first meeting. San Francisco is getting healthier defensively, top 4 in the league, both defending the run and the pass, and a projected conservative play-calling scheme for the San Francisco side with a bunch of injuries. We've talked about Christian McCaffrey being limited at practice, Brock Purdy, the quarterback, limited at practice, and no Deebo Samuel, who's out with the sprained MCL, could return rest of the regular season at some point, but I'm inclined to think, Michael, in Purdy's first road start without a weapon at full strength and without a weapon, period, it does profile as an under game despite all of Seattle's deficiencies on defense. So I'll gladly take under 43.5 if I'm forced to make a Thursday night play here.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me that's the way Kyle knows he needs to play the game. I mean, last time, you know, it was, what, a 34 game, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so, like, let's say Seattle's really, you know, they score 17. I think it's still a 20-17 game. So, you know, I think it'll be a closer game. But to me, you know, when you break it down, Seattle's going to have a hard time stopping the run. They've had a hard time stopping the run this whole year.
If they don't win this game, you have to think for the first time in quite a while, those yes-no make the playoff odds, the no will be favored for the first time since pretty early in the year. Right now, minus 145 range on Seattle to make As always, Michael, blast hanging out with you for 2 hours. Great. These shows just fly by. Enjoy things with Patrick. He's back tomorrow. I'm Ben Wilson saying so long for all of us at the Lombardi Line. Up next, it's VSiN Big Bets with Dave Ross and Amal Shaw.